Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with a bleary-eyed but very much alert Jim Garrity of National Review. Hopefully you caught him on the Great American Panel on the Hannity program last night on Fox News. And, Jim, we have, as always, good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. The good news is that there are not going to be a lot of Democrats apparently willing to stick their necks out by attending their own party's convention. I never thought that was a profile in courage before, but apparently this list just keeps growing and growing and growing. The big name that announced that she would not be in Charlotte in early September this week is a Missouri Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill, who was elected in 2006, huge Obama supporter in 2008, has voted for pretty much everything he's done. Now, of course, she's trying to pretend that she's not a knee-jerk liberal, so she's not going to attend the convention, and she's just the latest in the long line. You've got a lot of the congressional folks from West Virginia. She's the third senator, and this is just a growing trend here that the Democrats really can't explain away.
It is. And it's kind of intriguing because, you know, some people said this is kind of standard operating procedure. Julie Roginski, who was on the panel last night, made the case that she's a Democratic consultant, and she tells her clients, look, there's no point in going to the convention and hobnobbing with powerful people. The time is better spent in your district. And there's certain logic to that. But you look back to 2008, 2004, 2000, you didn't see this phenomenon. You did see a few House candidates for the Democrats stay away from Denver in 2008. And they were pretty much running in exactly the kind of districts where you think being associated with the National Party would be troublesome, places like Mississippi and rural Nevada and rural Georgia. So this is definitely a phenomenon that is spreading to much different geographic parts of the country, and certainly much more prominent figures like McCaskill, John Tester, who's in another tough race. So the idea that this is no big deal doesn't really hold water. And what's kind of intriguing is you look at all these folks, they're all in districts you classify as red or purple. And so now attending the convention, which used to be a kind of standard issue pro forma thing that, you know, elected officials did, has now become something of a luxury that you can only do if you're in a safe enough district. Now you might say, all right, well, the Republicans have this same factor. Well, Scott Brown represents the most Democratic-leaning state that, you know, any Republican represents in the Senate. He's attending the Republican convention in Tampa. And Bob Dold, and I emphasize that because it's not the former presidential candidate, is a congressman from a fairly deep blue seat in Illinois, and he's going to Tampa. So clearly Republicans don't feel like they're going to suffer any kind of political liability from being at their convention. It's kind of fascinating to see this phenomenon. I think it tells us a little bit about which way the political wind is blowing right now.
Yeah, absolutely right. And if this many people of his own party are publicly abandoning the president at his own re-coronation, you have to hope that the voters are seeing that as well and hopefully feeling that as well. Very interesting. President Bush in 2004, not exactly a non-polarizing figure. I don't remember a huge exodus of Republicans that year. So this is definitely unique. And hopefully there's a lot of people who supported Obama in 2008 that won't be doing so this year. On to martini number two now. And credit for this goes to Jim Garrity of National Review's Campaign Spot. This is a dissection of one of the latest Obama campaign ads, an Obama campaign ad essentially meant to divide America. But if you haven't already seen this, it's gotten a lot of play. But if you haven't already seen it, here's the audio of it.
The son of a single mom, proud father of two daughters, President Obama knows that women being paid 77 cents on the dollar for doing the same work as men isn't just unfair. It hurts families. So the first law he signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act to help ensure that women are paid the same as men for doing the exact same work. Because President Obama knows that fairness for women means a stronger middle class for America.
Now, just by listening to that ad, you would think that when the president took office, there was a pay disparity between men and women, and now that's been taken care of thanks to the Lilly Ledbetter Act. But as the video of the ad shows, the statistics showing that women make 70 cents on the dollar compared to men is from September of 2011. Lilly Ledbetter was signed into law in January of 2009. So, Jim, either the law didn't do anything or there might be some other reasons why this disparity exists.
Yeah, as I noted yesterday, if you're using 2010 figures to illustrate a problem that your January 2009 act was designed to solve, well, it wasn't much of a solution, now, was it? Now, further beyond, if you look at that number and you're like, hey, that sounds kind of surprising to me. You know, you wouldn't think there'd be that much of a gender disparity. And you start thinking, well, gee, maybe I'll start a small business and only hire women because they only cost 77% of what male workers do. The answer is that this is, one, the Obama ad is misstating what that statistic is measuring, meaning it is not for the same jobs. It is all women and all men for full-time jobs. And it is not surprising that men and women end up in being disproportionately represented in different jobs. There are more men than women in among truck drivers, and there are more women than men in elementary and middle school teachers. When you do this over, you know, all fields, all occupations, and all that stuff, then it comes out to the 77-cent figure. And people have pointed out that some of that comes down to the issue of seniority. Generally, most men have been on the job for about a year and a half longer than most women in this, you know, once you adjust for age and other factors. Yeah, once you start adjusting for these sorts of things, the pay gap disappears almost entirely, not completely. For computer programmers, women earn 95 cents for every dollar a man earns. For cashiers, 92 cents. Now, in a perfect world, would those numbers be 100%? Sure. But if you look at that, the problem looks much less severe when you look at it saying, you know, women are getting paid 90-some percent of what men are. Now, of course, Obama needs to hype the problem to make it look like, you know, most women believe that the reason they can't find jobs or the reason that their aspirations are not being fulfilled is not because of the crappy economic policies of this administration, but because of some nefarious boss who refuses to pay them a fair wage. And then Obama needs to pretend that his bill did something to solve this problem. Now, it's worth noting, you know, we've discussed Lilly Ledbetter before, Greg. Do you remember what Lilly Ledbetter Act actually did?
It allows you to sue if you think you are not making an equal wage, right?
Which you always had that right. The problem is that it used to have a statute of limitations. It was basically 180 days after the pay period in which the discrimination occurred. There was a Lilly Ledbetter was a woman who found out apparently like years later that she was making less than she thought that her male counterparts were getting, and that she was being discriminated against. Fought a legal case, and the judges said, "Well, you know, this is past the statute of limitations." The Lilly Ledbetter Act basically says, I believe it's several years after the last pay period, so women have longer amount of time to file a lawsuit. Now, I want all workers to get what they deserve. I'm glad that they have these rights to sue in case there is genuine discrimination, yada, yada, yada. But really, in the end of it, Lilly Ledbetter Pay Act is one of the most minuscule and kind of, you know, tweaking of the law to get hyped as the second Civil Rights Act or something like that. We shouldn't be surprising by Obama. What I want to do is thank them for putting the little tiny white fine print at the bottom of the screen, showing that it was from the Census Bureau, making me think, I wonder what year that was from, and finding out that they are citing recent data of a problem that their, you know, bill from 3 years ago was designed to solve.
Well, facts have never gotten in the way of this administration, so let them tout this to the hilt. That'll just allow people to look more into it, and they'll see exactly just how limited that legislation actually was. Kind of like most of Obama's presidency, a lot of bluster and not a lot of results, and the results we did get weren't that great. Speaking of which, the Obamacare ruling comes down tomorrow. Jim, as we head into the third martini, it's the crazy martini, and tomorrow's just going to be crazy because this is the last possible day of the court session. We know the ruling's going to come down. There'll be a media circus outside the court. There's going to be political statements on camera, in print, that just go crazy. Everybody, of course, trying to read the tea leaves. Who's writing the majority opinion? Who's writing the dissent? Will it be a garbled mess of split decisions inside? Will it be very clear? What side of the bed did Justice Kennedy get out of the morning they took their final vote on this? All sorts of things. And then, of course, on top of all that, you've got the House likely to vote on contempt citations for Eric Holder. So get ready, America. Washington is going to be nuts tomorrow. Oh, yeah. And it's going to be in the mid-90s, too.
Greg, I'm just going to observe this. I'm going to chalk this up to the sleep deprivation from a long journey back through to suburban Virginia last night. But as the vice president said, this is a big blanking deal, the decision coming down tomorrow. What is it kind of fascinating, Greg, is that, you know, to read the pundits, to read the columnists, to read people covering this, you know, everybody seems to think it's getting struck down. People have kind of done process of elimination and determined that John Roberts is most likely to write the majority opinion. People have looked at the workloads of the various justices and concluded that Ginsburg appears to be the person most likely to write the dissenting opinion. You add that up, and it certainly looks like that at least the individual mandate is going down, if not all of Obamacare. But look, we don't know this until tomorrow morning. So there's been kind of an awful lot, you know, of if not, you know, perhaps preemptive celebrations, preemptive blame shifting, preemptive anger, and all that stuff. So in less than 24 hours, we will know, and lots of people will be very happy, lots of people will be very upset. If it goes down, I think that a lot more Americans will be happy than they'll be upset, at least back according to poll numbers. And, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see how this has ramifications for the presidential race. But in the end, look, at this point, tune in tomorrow, folks, because there's really not much point in none of us thinking of what we think we know when you realize in the not-too-distant future we will know.
And another exciting thing is I'll be broadcasting the congressional baseball game tomorrow night, and one side is already going to be very happy going into the game, and one side most likely will not be unless it's a mush of a decision. And so I'll be looking for high spikes sliding into second base tomorrow night in case some people are still a little bit bitter over what happened. So,
Greg, both teams may be inebriated by that point. One side celebrating early and one side drowning their sorrows early. So I'm guessing a lot of wild swings and wild pitches tomorrow.
Yeah, could be. Should be a lot of fun. So, Jim, rest up from your long journey yesterday and getting ready for a crazy day tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.